Jeff's Guitar Clinic is a multifaceted shop offering guitars, amplifiers, and all accessories, guitar lessons for all ages, and instrument repair of the highest quality. Take the scenic drive to beautiful Fort Atkinson and see what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call Jeff's Guitar Clinic today at 920-723-1733. That's Jeff's Guitar Clinic at 920-723-1733. Jeffsguitar.com.
Welcome to another podcast at Sly'sOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like Madison Computer Works, S&R Remodeling, and St. Vincent de Paul. Joining us now, Associate Editor of the Capital Times, John Nichols, who also writes for The Nation. John, quite a day for Michael Flynn. And before you respond to that, let me just in case you forgot who Michael Flynn is. I know he was only in the federal government for 24 days. Just in case you forgot who he was, here is Michael Flynn in the summer of 2016.
We do not need a reckless president who believes she is above the law. Lock her up. That's right. Lock her up. I'm going to tell you what. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. I use hashtag never Hillary. That's what I use.
All right. Do you remember that guy?
I do. I'm reminded that he owes the former First Lady an apology.
I think he does.
No, seriously. When you're a Marine general and you get up and you lead and encourage chants of lock her up about a former Secretary of State, former U.S. Senator, who is running for the presidency and has some controversies, without a doubt.
Can you move your phone just a little? It sounded a little muffled.
Sure.
There you go. Much better.
Has some controversies, but is ultimately making an honorable run for the presidency. And you paint her as a criminal when you are, in fact, a very serious criminal. I just think you owe a little apology there. But I will offer another notion here, too, as regards Michael Flynn. This, I think, may sum the guy up. Usually, rats desert sinking ships, but in rare instances, rats actually sink ships.
Well, I don't know if you've ever watched John F. Kennedy's inaugural address in 1961. Mm-hmm. Have you ever watched that?
I have. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Do you remember this line? Because I think it's so apt as we record this podcast on Friday morning, December 1st, 2017.
Those who foolishly sought power by riding the back of the tiger ended up inside.
There you go. Is that not perfect?
Done. Well, you know, it's interesting, too. It's like Trump always reveals our vulnerabilities. I always have said that since he became president, that what Trump shows us is the imperfection of the American system. The fact that there are, you know, kind of openings and vulnerabilities, and that how those openings and vulnerabilities could be taken advantage of by dishonorable people. And, you know, historically we've had our ups and downs in the country, but usually in the presidency, even at its worst, we've had people who have tried to uphold certain standards. Trump doesn't do that. And so he's brought in hucksters, you know, and grifters and, you know, just kind of a group of people who are by their nature on the lawless side of things. And I think that Flynn is, you know, today he'll be example number one, and a very serious example of that. In the coming days, people will talk a lot about him. But it is important to understand that Flynn is part of a circle of grifters and, you know, con men and hucksters who came into this administration in part to advantage themselves and their families. No doubt about that. You know, and that goes right through the cabinet. There's tons of them. But also, they're there because they're scam artists. And Donald Trump didn't know anything about politics, didn't know anything about governance. He knew how to beat, you know, the establishment, and that's, give him his credit for that. But he didn't know the right people to put into things. And so he was immediately drawn to the scam artists. And don't think for a second that as this administration is held to account, you will not find Flynn after Flynn after Flynn after Flynn.
Well, here's the thing. This has been a pattern his whole life. There was a joke about his parties that he used to throw. It went something like, unless you've been indicted, you're not invited.
Nice. Well, I mean, you know, a guy who took his counsel from Roy Cohn, right? Joe McCarthy's sidekick, it's a good lesson in what you've got here. And so I think the Flynn thing is important because it illustrates something that is sort of a subtext of all this. When you're dealing with grifters and con men and scam artists, their first priority is, once they're in trouble, is to protect themselves. And there is no loyalty among these thieves. And for Trump, here's where it's gotten troublesome. He is not a courageous man. He is not a guy who runs into conflict, obviously, if you look at his Vietnam record. He is not someone who's willing to step up and really do, you know, even what is self-serving, effectively self-serving. And so his failure to start doling out pardons at a very early stage in this, which I'm glad he hasn't, and I think if he had, they should have been challenged. He should be impeached for abuse of pardons if he were to do it. But that has basically created a situation now where people like Flynn are going to start cutting plea deals.
Well, the fact
that they cut those plea deals, that's where, even if Trump ultimately were to pardon Flynn, see, this is the understanding, even if Trump were ultimately to pardon Flynn,
Flynn gets to testify.
They've got the information.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so
this Trump is in big trouble because of a choice that was made.
So in the last 12 hours, we have a story in the New York Times that Donald Trump repeatedly called Chairman Burr. Right. He also called other senators trying to get them to wrap up this investigation and repeatedly put pressure on them. Now, Burr sort of kindly said that he thought it was out of Trump's ineptness just coming to Washington. He didn't use the word inept.
Let me give it another way of saying it. Certainly the word inept is an acute one. There's another word that starts with I. Those calls are an impeachable offense, and do not doubt that when and if Donald Trump is impeached, and you have the list of particulars, you know, one of them, it'll probably be like number 17, will be pressuring Congress and agencies to shut down legitimate investigations of the White House. And people say, well, that doesn't rise to the level of impeachable offense. Quite wrong. It's a classic impeachable offense.
Yeah. So the debate last night on television whether this would bring another charge or this would be used in conjunction with firing Comey.
Well, it's in a conjunction, but in the obstruction of justice. But it is a separate charge in this regard. It is an assault on the system of checks and balances. That system of checks and balances, which is the legislative with the power to investigate and sanction the executive. And when you assault that system of checks and balances, you are attacking the Constitution itself. These are core components of the Constitution. And so people shouldn't lose sight of this. When Trump makes calls like that, he is committing an offense against the Constitution that is really a serious, one of the most serious you can do.
Okay.
People need to understand that.
So the other thing that's gone on in the last 12 hours is that Jefferson Beauregard Sessions, who I guess calls himself the Attorney General, refused to answer some questions. Here is Congressman Adam Schiff from California.
I do want to express my concern over his refusal to respond to what I think is a very important question. I asked the Attorney General whether he was ever instructed by the president to take any action that he believed would hinder the Russia investigation, and he declined to answer the question. There is no privileged basis to decline to answer a question like that. If the president did not instruct him to take an action that would hinder the investigation, he should say so. If the president did instruct him to hinder the investigation in any way, in my view, that would be a potentially criminal act and certainly not covered by any privilege. So it was disturbing to me that the Attorney General would not answer the question as to whether he was ever instructed by the president to hinder the Russia investigation in any way.
Well, that's not good.
It's really not good because it's something that probably shouldn't need to be stated to your audience because people listen to this podcast are pretty sharp folks and know the nuances of this. But it is always important to state for the record, the Attorney General is not the president's attorney. The independent and separate position of Attorney General, which is nominated or appointed by the president, but confirmed to that position by the Senate, thus giving it a higher level of responsibility, has duties to enforce the law and duties to uphold the Constitution that are separate and apart from anything the president may want. And so if indeed Trump has asked the Department of Justice to shut down inquiries into not just Trump himself, but into associates of Trump and people who might be related to the investigation in whatever way, he has committed, as Schiff suggests, a potentially criminal offense. And again, I don't want to harp on this too much, but he's also added another item to that list of impeachable offenses.
Well, and what about the Attorney General here? I mean, is this not obstruction of justice?
Yeah. The Attorney General, if the president has contacted him, seeking to get him to shut down inquiries that affect the president and the president's associates. Remember, this isn't a policy thing. This isn't the president saying, I'd like you to change your civil rights enforcement or I'd like you to change anti-monopoly enforcement or something like that. That's bad enough, but this is a personal contact, right? If the Attorney General knows of that, remember that he is not the president's lawyer. If the Attorney General knows of that and he is asked about it by Congress, which has oversight responsibility in this regard, the Attorney General does not have an option of reporting that potentially criminal violation, that potential assault on the Constitution. The Attorney General has a duty, a sworn duty, to report that to Congress. It is his job to protect the Constitution of the United States from all enemies, foreign and domestic.
You do remember that this is not the first time we've had an instance like this. You remember when former Indiana Senator Dan Coats, who now is in the Trump administration, Director of National Intelligence, essentially
yep.
refused to answer a question like that. And there was somebody else as well, where they essentially...
Yeah, I can name somebody else. John Kelly. Kelly was called before the Congress to talk about the Muslim ban way back when he was in another position. And he obfuscated, danced around, and then actually did a bizarre thing. He took personal responsibility for things that he clearly did not have personal responsibility for, in order to cover for Trump. So, yeah, you've got a list here.
As a matter of fact, if you go to the New York Magazine, they just posted something. Top GOP senators joined long list of people Trump pressured to end Russia probe. And they obviously mentioned Coates and a number of other people as well. So this is a clear pattern.
Yeah. I mean, well, patterns is a nice word for it. I would say obsession. That Donald Trump knows full well that he's in a lot of trouble. And he's operating now like a businessman. You know how our Republican friends will often say that they think government should be run like a business, right? Well, in a business, if you've got a problem, right, you're calling down to this department or that partner or whoever and saying, hey, you know, we really need to shut this down, or we've got to burn those files. But you see, when you have a constitutional system of government which has separation of powers and checks and balances, if you're making those calls, you are violating your oath of office and committing a potentially criminal act.
All right, I just found the other name. NSA Director Mike Rogers was the other person that was sitting next to Coates, and they both refused to answer the question. We got to take a break. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation with us at sliceoffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
Hi there. My name is Ishmael Ozan, and many of you know me as the Dane County District Attorney, but I am also a husband and a father of two young girls. Today, I am asking you to make the choice my wife and I made to not use physical punishment with our children. Many of us are not aware that over 16 years ago, the American Academy of Pediatrics urged doctors to recommend that parents not use physical punishment on their children. Today, over 100 years of research on children and families supports this recommendation. Look, well-meaning parents may use physical discipline intending to teach their children to make good choices, but we now know that physical discipline actually leads to more disobedience and aggressive behaviors in children. We all want what is best for our kids. Today, we now know what is best for kids is parenting based on respect, mutual understanding, and logic, rather than fear of physical pain. Please join me in learning more about positive parenting and creating a violence-free home.
Paid for by the Dane County District Attorney's Office with support from UW Health American Family Children's Hospital.
All right, because there's so much craziness going on, we forgot to talk about the tax bill. John Nichols is back with us at sliceoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. So, John, this tax bill, they call it tax reform. And when Paul Ryan does his yoga, he evidently channels this tax reform in his inner soul. How's that going?
Well, if it's tax reform, if that's the word they give to it now, that's cool. I don't know if the yoga instructor is using that term. I would call it, you know, marching orders from Wall Street, right? I mean, this what's on the table here in this tax reform is everything that Paul Ryan has ever been in Congress to do. And it's important to understand what we're talking about here. Paul Ryan came to Congress with the purpose of attacking Medicare and Medicaid, ultimately Social Security. That's his dream. It's his mission. He kind of defaults to it whenever it's possible. The problem for Paul Ryan is that Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security are incredibly popular. So every time he tries to go at them directly or even via health care bills, he's shot down. And so now Paul Ryan, forget the senators here. This is at core Paul Ryan's mission, although obviously many of the senators agree with it, is to so gut out the federal government, to so warp its policies that ultimately there will be a crisis situation where it will be quote-unquote necessary to go after Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. I'm not the one saying this. This is what AARP and other folks are saying. Their analysis of this tax bill is that it will, with its trillion-dollar deficits and its incredible, warping of the balances as regards how we raise money and spend it, create a situation where Medicare and Medicaid are clearly endangered. And so people need to understand this is what this is about. This is not about a middle-class tax cut. This is not about, getting money, into the economy so businesses will hire.
Right.
This is about a full-on assault by Wall Street on Medicare and Medicaid. It will have many, many other devastating impacts, no doubt about it. But at the heart of this thing, any senator who votes for this is voting directly, without a question, to create a situation where cherished programs that overwhelming majorities of Americans want will be not just threatened, but almost certainly undermined.
Here is Donald Trump.
Wait till you see what finally comes out in what I call the mixer. The beating heart of our plan is a tax cut for working families. That's what it is. With Trump as your president, we are going to be celebrating Merry Christmas again, and it's going to be done with a big, beautiful tax cut.
Big, beautiful tax cut.
Yeah, I was interested in the biblical connections there, weren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Merry Christmas and a big, beautiful tax cut.
Uh-huh.
Because I hadn't actually seen the references to that in the historical context. I do believe taxes were involved, by the way. But I'm not sure that the money changers and the folks who are playing all these games with all this money stuff, that they were the heroes of the storyline.
Here's just one little piece of this terrible tax bill.
Across the country, walkouts and protests at Republican plans to target college students.
I will not be able to continue studying microbiology, which is my passion.
12 million Americans would be affected, no longer allowed to deduct student loan interest from their taxes. Also targeted graduate students, many involved in cutting-edge scientific medical research who work on campus in exchange for a tuition waiver. Republicans want to treat that waived tuition as income, hitting them with an estimated 400% tax increase, yet little income to pay for it. At American University, Mina Kato would have to pay tax on her $54,000 grad school tuition, which is waived.
I already have a student loan that I'm trying to pay off. I don't know if I can take out another student loan, which means I don't know if I can pay to finish my degree.
70% of students leave with some form of debt. It takes the average person 20 years to pay off their student loans. But every day, 3,000 people default on their federal student loans. Michael Drake is a medical doctor and president of the Ohio State University.
We want people to be educated. Being able to borrow money facilitates that education. Making it hard to pay that debt back is bad for them and bad for the country.
So they're literally sabotaging our future. Future brilliant students that could solve Alzheimer's or cancer or heart disease or some other problem, or how to feed the world in a more environmentally respectful way. We're literally sabotaging our future.
Or literally, or simply just to have a meaningful career that allows them to contribute to society in ways that, in the day-to-day. I mean, we always focus on the best and the brightest here, and I understand that, as you just did. But we should also understand that in this modern society, that the education is going to be more and more critical just to be able to manage, the changing demands in a technological revolution, a digital revolution. And so you couldn't imagine a more wrong-headed approach here, right? Where we're at now is a situation where experts on the future say that we're going to need sort of a constant re-education, a constant expansion of our education so that we know how to handle the new developments of our times. And these tax credits and benefits that exist are, they're systematic. They're not, we shouldn't understand them as individual realities. They are part of a system that can function. Actually, I'm, you know, like Bernie Sanders, I believe that we really should have free education. You know, that we should develop a system where our resources go to funding education in a way that assures that anybody who's qualified can get it, no matter what their economic circumstance. And there may be some form of repayment in service that comes after you've gotten that education or some other model, but there should be no economic barrier to getting a degree. Unfortunately, we have tremendous economic barriers right now, and these tax credits, these tax benefits are minor ways in which we address those barriers. To knock them down is madness, and in fact, it really is. If you're talking about a tax bill that's supposed to help the economy, this does not help the economy.
And you talked to someone who discovered another little nugget in this bill having to do with the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Yeah, I was with Tom Harkin yesterday, and if people remember Senator Tom Harkin from Iowa, he, with Bob Dole and Ted Kennedy and others, basically enacted one of the great civil rights and social justice measures in modern times, the Americans with Disabilities Act. It said that, you know, if the people with disabilities have a right to access to businesses, to schools, to, you know, community centers, that we can't, you know, have physical barriers to those who might be needing a little extra help or might be in a wheelchair or something like that. And so within the laws of the country, within the tax laws of the country, are credits for small businesses that install a ramp or that in some other way make it possible for people with disabilities to access, you know, again, a business, you know, any commercial entity. And as Harkin pointed out, those tax credits are threatened by this tax bill. I think especially in the House bill, if I'm correct from what Harkin was saying. And so this is a huge deal, Sly, because, you know, what happens with this is if they knock out the tax credits for small businesses, the tax benefits for small businesses that put a ramp in, that put an elevator in, that in some other way make it possible for people with disabilities to get where they need to go, then you know what's going to happen. There will, in short order, be calls for altering the ADA to make exceptions for small businesses or for some entities because they can't afford it. When you do that, this is not just about economics. You are undermining a civil rights protection. You're basically saying,
right,
yeah, you have a right to go wherever you need to go. You have a right to access, except, you know, for a whole bunch of places.
Well, the deduction for medical expenses for people who have children with chronic diseases or a loved one in a care facility, this is a huge hit.
Yeah, I mean, there are parents who are beside themselves. And, you know, I mean, imagine the horrible circumstance of being a parent of a child who has, you know, some profound challenges, things that you yourself cannot fully address or handle. But you love your kid and you want to do everything you can to help that kid. And also to knowing that at some point you may be gone, but to know that there will be protections and that there will be a stability. And this has been a hellacious year for those folks because when this administration and this Congress have attacked the Affordable Care Act, when they've threatened Medicare and Medicaid, you know, again and again now through this tax bill, they're taking these parents who have so many responsibilities, so many direct challenges as regards their own life circumstance, and making them also have to live with, worry about huge economic threats. And all of this is being done, Sly, all of this is being done by Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell so that they can give gifts, not necessary funding or not, you know, necessary tax reform, but literally gifts to billionaires and to multinational corporations.
All right, here's a little icing on the cake for today. We can't leave so down. I've got to leave you something to smile with today. This is Lindsey Graham now and then.
You know what concerns me about the American press is this endless, endless attempt to label the guy as some kind of kook, not fit to be president.
And here's the second part.
You know what concerns me about the American press is this endless, endless attempt to label the guy as some kind of kook, not fit to be president.
Senator Lindsey Graham can't stand people calling Donald Trump a kook who is not fit to be president. But that phrase sure does sound familiar.
I'm not going to try to get into the mind of Donald Trump because I don't think there's a whole lot of space there. I think he's a kook.
Okay, now, he said he was a kook, but that's a short clip. I think we need more context. He didn't actually say he's unfit for office, did he?
I think he's a kook. I think he's crazy. I think he's unfit for office.
Okay, all right, so he said he's a kook, he's unfit for office. That was one time. It would only reach the height of hypocrisy if Lindsey Graham engaged in an endless, endless attempt to label Trump as someone who is not fit to be president.
I don't think he has the temperament or judgment to be commander-in-chief. I don't think he has the temperament or judgment to be commander-in-chief. He's not fit to be president of the United States. He's a race-baiting, xenophobic, religious bigot. Opportunistic, race-baiting, religious bigotry, xenophobia. He doesn't have the temperament or judgment to control himself. He's a jackass.
So there you go. That is the courageous Lindsey Graham.
The tragedy of Lindsey Graham, the real tragedy, is that, you know, remember how I say that Donald Trump exposes our vulnerabilities? Donald Trump has exposed Lindsey Graham's vulnerability. Lindsey Graham was willing to courageously oppose Donald Trump when it looked like there would be a divide within the Republican Party over Donald Trump. And he thought there's a possibility of taking advantage of that. Now that it's very, very clear that the Republican Party is Donald Trump's party, that Donald Trump owns the Republican Party, suddenly Lindsey Graham is not so courageous anymore.
Isn't that something?
Because he knows that to fit into this party, he's got to be a Trump man.
And so it goes.
And it's been very, very notable to the extent to which he's made that move in the last few months.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thanks for coming to SlysOffice.com.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union. And every day, we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.